Welcome back to Leads to Scale, a podcast from Social Media Week. I'm your host, Toby Daniels. It's been an incredibly busy few weeks for myself and the team at Social Media Week. Earlier in the month, we hosted Social Media Week in LA in Santa Monica. And last week, I was in the south of France, where I attended the 2019 Cannes Lions Festival of Creativity. It's actually my first time back at Cannes in, I think, more than 3 years. And it was amazing to see how the event has evolved and changed over that time, and also how the conversation has shifted. However, my biggest takeaway was that as an industry, we seem to have come full circle. Many of the conversations this year were focused on the core of what matters in terms of engaging and growing audiences, which was creativity and purpose. This, of course, is central to our theme this year, Stories with Great Influence Comes Great Responsibility. So for me, it was hugely inspiring to be at Cannes and participating in so many relevant and invigorating conversations. All right, so let's get to this week's episode of the podcast, which is a peach. Featuring Sheena Shiravi, who is the Director of Consumer Communications at Ease. Now, if you're not familiar, Ease is a cannabis technology platform and marketplace that connects adult consumers to licensed dispensaries and brands via an on-demand delivery service. So think seamless, but for cannabis delivery. This particular episode of the podcast was actually recorded live during our Social Media Week LA fireside chat. The topic of the conversation was marketing with ease, how to overcome challenges in a highly regulated industry. We talked about a bunch of stuff during the conversation, specifically what are some of the biggest challenges of marketing in a highly regulated industry, like the cannabis industry, of course. How are Ease leveraging social and the challenges that they have to face as compared to traditional brands? We also talked about some of the biggest misconceptions that people have about the cannabis industry and cannabis consumers, and how Ease is applying data to understand their consumers and tailor messages accordingly. Finally, we also talked about how Ease is setting themselves apart in a crowded market to get their story across. You can watch this session and 50 more from Social Media Week in LA this past June by joining SMW Insider, our live streaming platform and on-demand library of more than 300 hours of content. Thanks again for listening to Leads to Scale. And as always, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to Leads to Scale on your favorite podcasting app. And I hope you enjoy the conversation. All right. What's up, everyone? How's it going? Oh, a murmur. I got a murmur from you. Fantastic. well, I appreciate everyone joining us for this session. I am very excited to welcome Sheena to the stage and to host Ease at Social Media Week. So this is a really fascinating topic for me. And we're excited to welcome Ease to Social Media Week specifically because I feel we have a ton to learn from companies like Ease that are operating in both an incredibly new and nascent category, as well as also operating in a fairly highly regulated space. And regulation is oftentimes sort of seen as being like a bad thing, right? It restricts innovation, it makes it difficult to be able to operate in certain spaces or in certain categories. But regulation also represents an opportunity, and an opportunity to think about the ways in which you engage your consumers in more interesting or creative ways where, you know, you have to potentially circumvent
some of the kind of restrictions and regulations that are in place. And so I think that this is going to be a great conversation. Obviously, we're here in California. There's more happening, I think, in the cannabis space, here than pretty much anywhere else around the world. So we're very much at kind of like the epicenter of innovation in the cannabis space. So I'm just like really excited to welcome Sheena and to be having this conversation and hopefully share some insights with you guys this morning. So Sheena, let's start with you and your background. Like give our audience a little bit of perspective in terms of like what drew you into the cannabis space in terms of kind of the next kind of move or chapter that you wanted to sort of like make in your career. And why Ease specifically? What was it about Ease that excited you and kind of drew you into this space?
Absolutely. First of all, thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here. Sheena Shravi, Director of Consumer Communications at Ease. I actually was born and raised in Orange County. I'm Persian, so I grew up in a pretty conservative household. So I moved up to Northern California. I went to Berkeley, and from the get-go, there were so many stereotypes of, oh, you're going to come back, with a tattoo on your forehead and just a total hippie. And I hated stereotypes from a young age. Being Persian in Orange County, there's a stereotype around that. Going up to Berkeley, there's a big stereotype around there. And I, started consuming cannabis in college with a lot of my friends who, post-graduation went off to Harvard Business School, Stanford Medicine, wildly successful, So the stereotype wasn't true. There's nothing to it. And so graduated, got into PR. Generally, when I'm really passionate about something, I don't shut up about it. I remember when I discovered ride sharing in 2012, that entire summer, I downloaded it on all of my friends' phones. And they're like, I don't want to get in a car with a stranger. I was like, you have to. It's not crazy. Just do it. It's like, and, there you go. So I was in PR, and around 2014 it was, I had a good friend who, she was a Stanford graduate, was working at Lyft actually, and she quit to go work in the cannabis industry. And I was like, what are you doing? At the time, Prop 64 wasn't even a thing in California. It was still medical, getting the medical card kind of felt like a rubber stamping process anyway. So I couldn't believe what she was doing, but it was really exciting. I supported her. I was like, you're a badass for doing this. And I started following what was going on, and Ease launched that year, and it was like slowly starting to grow. That March, another one of my friends, kind of a child prodigy, went to go work there as well, and I was like, is there something to this? Fast forward to October 2000, at this point, 2015, I got an opportunity to sit down with the CEO. He's like, we need great people. It was a small team. It was like under 30. And, what attracted me to Ease was, first of all, we didn't actually touch the plant. So we were just a technology platform that operated within the space, which was, it made me a little bit more comfortable. Second of all, it was being able to be at the forefront of changing the narrative around cannabis. At the time, Colorado had just legalized it, I think January of that year. And all the headlines were just really punny, and it was like personally offensive. I was a working professional, all my friends were, we all consumed cannabis. And I was really excited at the opportunity to really just change the narrative around cannabis. So,
quick show of hands, how many of you in the audience are familiar with Ease? How many of you are customers?
Nice.
Excellent.
Thank you.
So, well, at least there's like a contingent of people that we can kind of like, educate about like what Ease is. So just walk us through the company, the service that you provide. Obviously, this slide here sort of helps, I think, just to kind of frame things from a sort of an ecosystem standpoint. But just talk about the company and the services that you provide.
Yeah, so it's really interesting. Consumers don't actually know the actual business model. They kind of think that Ease is doing the deliveries for them. But actually, we created a software that local retailers use. So all the drivers are all employed by the retailers. And what we were aiming to do in the beginning was to make it quick, easy, and professional. You know, the origin story of Ease was like the founder heard the story of Charlotte Biggie, the four-year-old with grand mal seizures, and really realized there was a lot to this, you know, cannabis thing, but it was just shady. It was a really uncomfortable process. You don't know where to go get your medical card. If you do, you don't know where a dispensary is. Going into the dispensary is uncomfortable. So we wanted to try to take the complexities out of cannabis and make it more of, you know, a comfortable, above board experience. So we built an e-commerce site, just like any other. I mean, it looks like Netflix, Instacart, whatever. And so a consumer gets to our menu, sees it, and is able to, you know, order. And so if you look, the consumer and the retailer, they're the ones who are transacting, right? And Ease is kind of just powering this. Now, we also work with brands to kind of bring on and curate the best-in-class brands on into our marketplace. But again, the brands are selling to the retailer. You know, that's a brand-to-retailer transaction. And then, as you were saying, you know, it's a nascent industry and it's growing. And so we work a lot with policymakers because we're a technology company. We have access to a lot of really good data. Mm-hmm. And to try to help, you know, shine a light on who the cannabis consumer is. You know, how do you regulate if you're going to, if you're thinking about what the business operation hours for a cannabis company should be. If you, you know, let's say we want to close business at 6. Well, our data can show that actually deliveries happen more between 7 and 9. So things like that. And then community. I mean, this industry started as a community. You know, it's a movement. And so making sure that we are, I mean, we're standing on the shoulders of giants and making sure that we, you know, are working with those who started and got the movement to this point to move it forward.
You know, I think it's all very well telling us about Ease and how it works, but I think it's like much more interesting to actually see how it works. So I think it would be a good idea to order a delivery. So Sheena, why don't you walk us through a process of actually making an order? And I know that we have a little setup over there, so you guys can actually sort of see visually how we can actually order products on Ease and have them delivered to the stage right here this morning.
First time.
And I'm not joking. This is actually what we're going to do, and I'm very excited. So. Let's switch to the Ease app. There
so,
we go.
Ease.com.
Beautiful.
Had it queued up. So you hit the menu, and last night I actually, one of my friends signed up, so I have a $20 credit. Sign up for Ease. And up at the very top, you can see different educational articles. You could click through. It's Pride Month, so we're kind of featuring some of the brands there. There's different groups, obviously. There's deals of the day, things that I've purchased in the past.
And hurry up already. Come on.
Okay.
I'm joking.
So what do I want? Let's get some of my favorite things. So Dosist, obviously, I think is really popular, and it's really easy. It's a pen that basically vibrates when you've had a dose. The Relief is one of my favorites. So you can click on it, read about it. See the THC CBD ratio, and then add it to your cart. What else do we want? I also really like the PAX, so maybe we'll get a PAX device and a pod. Where's my favorite? Jetty, and we'll get into this later, but Jetty is just a really good company. They have a great compassionate care program, so I generally like supporting them.
So Dosist, PAX, and then?
And then we'll do Akiva. They have a drag queen edition for Pride.
Perfect.
Which is awesome. Tropical punch.
You should see me through to the end of the day, right?
What? okay, so then we go to checkout, and you can check your cart, make sure the quantities are all right. And then we go to checkout. If you have a promo code, but I don't. I have those credits, though. And then I'll do cash. I think I left my wallet backstage, so. Okay, well, I guess I'll tell the driver, please come to the event space. Walk. Where are we? Stage one?
Stage one, yeah.
Into stage one. On stage.
Thanks. Cool. And you just place your order.
Awesome. Great. Perfect.
Nice.
Let's give Sheena a round of applause. And Uh-oh.
Let me cancel.
Let's do it again. Fuck it. Let's do it live.
I'll just text the ops people and have them reroute it for me. I guess that's good. Lucky about working there.
All right. Good spot, by the way. That would be very disappointing. All right. So while you are texting your ops people, we're gonna pat our head and rub our stomachs at the same time and try to continue the conversation. But fingers crossed that works out. I hope it does, because that's going to definitely make for a pretty great afternoon. So now that we have a bit of an understanding of EE's the company and a sort of sense of like what the kind of ecosystem works, let's just talk about regulation, what we really mean when we talk about regulation, because it's a bit of a moving target at this point. It's an industry that is new and it's being regulated kind of, you know, as it also continues to sort of evolve and move forward. We were just talking backstage about the sort of the kind of, you know, building the aeroplane while it's sort of taking off, like, metaphor, and I think it's a great one, but I think also what's important to kind of point out is that it's taking off really quickly, it's very steep, and there is just an unbelievable amount of consumer demand, which just only sort of adds to the pressure and the complexity. So just to talk about the ways in which you think about regulation in the context of EE's and in particular in your role.
Absolutely. So when we started, actually, compliance was really important to us. We wanted to build something totally legit. And so we invested a lot in actual government affairs and kind of public policy. And again, as you're saying, kind of the plane was being built as we were going. So we wanted to make sure that we had a seat at the table and were, again, helping these regulators write laws based on facts and not just, you know, preconceived notions. So that was really important for us to kind of help really pave the way for, I mean, our company, but also the entire industry. That being said, it has changed a lot. Feels like every couple of months there's something new, especially after Prop 64 passed. You know, the state had a year to put together their regulations, and then it was draft regulations, and then 3 months later there was a new draft, and then like 3 months later there was a new draft. So it's really important to be nimble. Compliance needs to be baked in. I think it's much harder to do at the beginning. You're definitely making your job a lot more difficult if you're trying to be compliant from the beginning versus, you know, just making all the money doing it the illicit way. But in the long term, it's more sustainable. So you get really creative. So things like Google AdWords aren't available to you, Facebook ads aren't available, Instagram, which is part of the Facebook family. Our Instagram's been shut down 6 different times. We've had so many different Apple and Google, so PSA, there is an app in both of those stores, but neither of them, you can't actually buy cannabis through it, so it's a really confusing kind of consumer experience. You have to go to the website.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about that. So obviously there's the government and regulation in the context of policy. Mm-hmm. But I want to sort of talk about regulation in the context of the digital platforms. And so you just mentioned, obviously, Instagram and Google Ads and all the various different kind of challenges that represents. So just describe that, because like it's just as straightforward as like, okay, well, we can't use these platforms and therefore we won't. Mm-hmm. There is circumvention and some sort of ways in which you can do things, and there are limits to that. But just what are some of the ways that you're leveraging these different tools? And maybe provide a couple of examples of some of the creative ways in which you've sort of worked around.
Very creative. And this will actually be an underlying theme of, you know, there's the government and then there's digital platforms. A lot of these platforms either are, they don't want to get shut down by the federal government for supporting this. You know, it's still federally illegal. So that's just something to remember. So different kind of solutions to these things are, for instance, using influencers. Influencers are a great way to get your brand out there.
Mm-hmm.
But the caveat there is a lot of influencers might be sponsored by another company who doesn't really like cannabis. So finding your influencer is also really difficult. And the regulations are, you know, their audience, it needs to be marketed to 21 plus. I think 72% of their audience needs to be 21 plus. So it's finding those the right influencers and then making sure the influencer kind of, I mean, this is, I guess, true for any company, but matches your brand. Mm.
And I'm going to come back to the influencer conversation in a second, but you mentioned that you've been shut down like multiple times on Instagram. What specifically are some of the reasons why you've been shut down?
They don't tell you.
Right.
All of a sudden, one day you wake up, your Instagram's shut down, all of your content is gone, all of your followers are gone, and it's a guessing game, you know? At first it was, okay, maybe our website was on there, so you can't have like a direct link to buy the cannabis. And then it was, you know, we were putting our promos up there and, you know, go to our website to get 20% off of this brand. And we're like, okay, we can't do that. And then we're like, let's just do educational content or lifestyle photography. Mm. At that point, like my personal opinion is like competitors go and flag us.
Right.
But they don't tell you. They don't tell you. And the way that we've gotten our Instagram back is really through our own network. Like an employee will have a friend there, hit them up and be like, yo, can you?
Right.
But it's gotten a lot more, I know internally at Instagram, I think they've had meetings and they're like, if anyone's caught unflagging these cannabis,
right,
like you'll be in trouble.
So, but is the conversation between you and the platforms at this point a constructive one, or is it just like, is it entirely opaque? You don't know really what's going on, and they're not providing like necessarily clear guidelines in terms of how you should be working.
And actually, in the instance of Apple, the App Store, it got worse and worse the more we tried to talk to them. So originally, we were able to have a link in the app, so at least it would go and open the web app. And then when it first got shut down, you know, we try to talk to them, and they're like, you can't have a link. And they just started stripping down more and more of what we could have in there. And then a couple weeks ago, Google made an announcement that they were going to also follow suit, which is a shame, you know. And we actually, again, our public affairs, government affairs team, we have California state regulators, you know, admonishing them, basically being like, you guys are cutting a legal channel or an access point to legal cannabis and really just fueling the illicit market.
Yeah.
So, you know, there isn't a lot of clarity into why they're doing it, but really it's, and again, this is another theme, is finding like-minded or adjacent industries that can also benefit, or other parties. So it's not just, you know, the cannabis company coming forward. It's finding, you know, an epilepsy foundation, the cancer foundation, being like, these are legitimate channels for legal tested products, and you guys are just making it more difficult.
I mean, presumably, until it's like legal at the federal level, then the platform companies are just like, well, our hands are tied at this point.
Exactly.
Right. So let's go back to influencers for a second. We've been talking a ton about influencer marketing at this conference, and, you know, it's obviously a category that continues to evolve, and certainly it's starting to kind of mature. When you think about identifying the right influencers who can represent your brand appropriately, like what is that? What does that process look like?
It's really making sure you have your audience segmentation, like who do you want to speak to, and what is your brand? You know, we kind of see ourselves as a wellness, a lifestyle brand with a little bit of wellness, but also we're a little cheeky, and it's like, we sell weed at the end of the day. So, but at the same time, we don't want to, you know, we don't want to fit into that stereotype of like a bong ripping, you know, couch locked stoner. So it's really kind of finding the right mix of like, you know, we'll do a lot of fitness and wellness influencers, yoga teachers, like small boxing studios. Mm-hmm. A lot of the instructors have kind of, we find micro-influencers because a lot of, again, the bigger celebrity national influencers, they don't want to come out and lose a lot of their fan base supporting cannabis. So right. That's also, again, a challenge. So that's kind of how we identify them. And again, obviously making sure that their audience is 21 plus.
We interrupt this week's episode of Leads to Scale to share an update in regards to our forthcoming conference in London, the 10th annual edition of Social Media Week London, Europe's premier conference for media and marketing professionals, is taking place at the QE2 Conference Center in Westminster between October 31st and November 1st. This year's event will continue the 2019 global theme Stories With Great Influence Comes Great Responsibility, a conversation that will explore how social media has become the most influential story platform in the world that has the power to both unite and divide us. Check out our first wave of speakers and secure your pass by visiting socialmediaweek.org/London. And don't forget to use the code LEADS2SCALE at the checkout to save an additional 10% off your pass. All right, let's get back to the show.
Let's talk about experiential. So obviously events and sort of IRL engagement with your customers is clearly really important, and also presents just like a great opportunity from a marketing standpoint. Just walk us through some of the examples of what you've been doing in the experiential space.
Yeah, this is huge. Again, getting the product in the hands of people is so important. I guess by a show of hands, who's had a really bad edible experience? And so people are terrified of it, but there are now edibles that are 2 milligrams, which is nothing. And so people don't know that products have become sophisticated enough where you can actually control, your dose. And that's, Dosis is actually a company that does a really good job doing experiential events. They actually came onto our platform right when they launched, and they had a high price point, so they weren't doing really well because people were like, why would I want to buy a vape that's this expensive? They came off our platform and spent a year and a half doing these small educational events, teaching people, showing them that it's a wellness tool. There's different ratios. You know, this is effect-based naming is becoming a really big thing.
Can you just describe what that is?
Yeah, so basically, instead of having your product be like Alien OG, Blue Dream, Green Crack, it's now, or even Indica Sativa Hybrid.
Right.
The mainstream consumer doesn't know what these things are. So it's calm, creative, relief. It's how you want to feel. So it's like a subtle educational piece in there, too. Then Dosis came back on about a year ago, and they're doing phenomenally. And so similarly, another thing that we do is not only consumer events to get, again, the products in the hands of consumer. People have so many questions about cannabis. Myself, to all of my friends, I act like a concierge of, okay, like, you know, how do you want to feel is usually what you start with. But then also doing events for influencers and press where you are helping them understand that it's not, you know, something that's punny or, you know, something that, it's something you should take seriously. For instance, I did kind of a wine and cannabis pairing where it was like a terpene lesson. You had a flight of wine, you had a flight of cannabis flower, and you would like sip the wine and smell the cannabis. And this like blew reporters' minds. You know, there was no consumption there, but like, oh, there's a certain level of sophistication that they just didn't realize. So,
do you think as it becomes more sophisticated, it will become easier to navigate regulation?
Yes and no. I think that as regulators start understanding that this isn't something to be scared of, and it's not alcohol, you know, it's not pharmaceuticals, it's kind of in a class of its own, it's like a Venn diagram somewhere in the middle. I think the more research, that's the big key thing. Another reason that there isn't a lot of research is because it's federally illegal and a lot of research institutions have federal funding. Actually, we were going to do a research summit at UCLA in June, and at the 11th hour, the top, they were like, we're not going to support anything cannabis, and shut down. And it was a research summit.
Right.
So once there's a lot more research, and again, I mean, it's decades of propaganda, reversing the war on drugs mentality, that's when I think you'll start seeing.
So another important way of circumventing a lot of the regulations and just thinking about like how do you identify channels through which you can engage your customers is obviously through partnerships. Just provide a couple of examples of the partnerships that have been working really well for you.
Yeah, so this kind of goes into the theme of like third-party validators, whether that's influencers or partnerships, like finding those adjacent kind of companies. So again, understanding who your audience is. Equinox for the wellness kind of angle, they've been great. We've done a couple of events there, but they're obviously more on the CBD side, so the like to non-intoxication. And then you have the Grateful Dead, which again, that's like OG cannabis consumer. And so that's great, making sure we're not, you know, because really we want to be the platform for everybody, whether it is the wellness, the soccer mom, or kind of the more experienced consumer. And then Pop Chips as well. That was a fun one. They were really excited. Another word on partnerships, similar to, again, everything else. When we started, you know, we had this idea, we're like marketers that came from other industries. None of us really had cannabis experience when we started 4 years ago. We're like, oh, like Chipotle would be the best partnership. Could you imagine eating Chipotle? So we reached out to them and they were like, yeah, that's awesome. Let's do it. We started planning. And then it got all the way up to their illegal and they shut it down because, again, it's a national brand. They don't want that right. to be targeted. So it was a really, really slow roll. Pop Chips was the same. And then after Prop 64 passed, Pop Chips actually came back to us. They're like, all right, now that it's passed, let's start exploring. Right. So you're having a lot of these kind of boomerang conversations.
We're gonna talk about stereotypes in a minute, because actually I want to make sure that when we do talk about stereotypes, we actually come back and reference Pop Chips for fairly obvious reasons, mm-hmm. but and maybe even the Grateful Dead. But I want to skip through, because we're in the interest of time, and I want to be able to take questions as well from you guys, and we actually have mic runners, so you don't have to get up from your seats, so start thinking about your questions. Before we get into stereotypes, I want to talk about social impact, because I think one of the really fascinating aspects to the cannabis space, and in particular in terms of like how it's repositioned itself as a wellness product, is obviously the obvious implications for how it can have a positive impact on people's lives and a positive impact on society. And then obviously with that is the work that you guys have been doing in terms of like really embracing that opportunity. Can you talk about some of the social impact initiatives you have going?
Absolutely. And also looks like my delivery was rerouted and we'll be here in 5 minutes.
Holy shit.
Perfect.
Guys, we might cut this short.
Yeah. social impact is huge. The cannabis industry just has always been such a passionate industry. And actually, it's Pride Month. The cannabis legalization movement in California is intrinsically tied to the HIV/AIDS. It started in Castro Prop 215, which legalized medical marijuana in 1996, was written in the Castro, little known fact. So from the get-go, cannabis, I mean, people were just giving cannabis away to AIDS patients. You know, there wasn't any sort of, no, like, this is mine, you need to pay me for it. You pass a joint around. Like, it's an inherently social, communal thing. So it's been part of the fabric. And for ease, again, coming into the game in 2014, recognizing there was, you know, nearly two decades of industry before that, making sure, okay, how are we being good community citizens? So we launched a social impact program. It focuses primarily on two things, compassionate care, so patients, as well as social justice, and so economic empowerment, social justice, and social equality. And then these are examples of some of the brands on our menu that also have fantastic programs. So Bloom Farms, for every single product that you buy, they donate a meal. Jetty Extracts, they have their shelter project, which is providing free cannabis to cancer patients. And then for Pride, you know, you have Kiva Plus, so many dosist, coming out with Pride-specific products to, again, celebrate Pride. But another kind of added side effect is in this era of conscious consumerism, this is another way that you're kind of creatively marketing to this audience, you know? How there are so many edible brands now, there are so many vaporizer brands. How are you, you know, and it's like, what differentiates you? Oh, it's the quality, it's the taste, you know, and it's like, how many times can you hear that? And so this is really a way that you can differentiate your brand, is by, you know, supporting good causes and rallying behind.
So I'm going to ask one more question, and then we'll take some questions from the audience, and then hopefully something will arrive, and then we'll all have a great time. So, so get ready with your questions and just show of hands. So, the question about stereotypes. So, at the beginning of the conversation, you actually mentioned how you dislike stereotypes and to a certain extent work against them, particularly in terms of like why you were drawn into this sort of space. However, it's almost impossible to get away from it. Mm-hmm. I mean, even like going back to the Pop Chicks example, we're all sitting there thinking, oh my God, they look delicious, but just imagine how delicious Pop Chips and that particular kind of product would be, after consuming cannabis. And so, what is the general kind of attitude and approach to distancing yourself from stereotypes? Or is it actually something that's still worth embracing?
Oh, this will be a forever fight. It's education, education, education. And also data, putting facts to it and not just, again, anecdotal stories. I think once it does go federally legal in research institutions, I think that'll be hugely helpful once there's actually studies to kind of back what we've been seeing. Ease, we do a lot of surveys. We put out data reports all the time, at least once a year, and are constantly pumping out educational just content, materials, and putting it out there so consumers kind of understand, and little by little kind of they get there. And a huge kind of other marketing aspect is really word of mouth. So once you change the mind of one person, and you see this a lot with parents in the older generation, they're really now more curious about it.
Okay, let's take some questions. Right, in here. Mics, wait, just if you don't mind waiting for the mics. do we have only one mic? Okay, this is going to take a while.
Excuse me.
I think that's our order.
Where?
Over there.
Oh my God. Okay, hold on to your question. Yeah.
Woo! You want it? Let me go get my wallet real quick.
Yeah, she has to go and get cash. I have no cash with me, unfortunately. It's always the way. Wonderful. Come up. Come up to the stage.
Sorry for the delay.
So, what's your name?
Nikki.
Nikki. Everyone say hi to Nikki.
Hi.
Thank you so much for joining us, and now we have some cash.
Yeah.
This is a first, I think, at least for me.
Yep.
You guys? This ever happened before?
Thank you. Let's see.
How much?
It was a lot. That was a big order.
It was a big order? I'm sorry, I got carried away.
No, you should keep it coming all the way
so
out
sweet.
Of here. Do I sign it?
And then, yep.
Awesome, thank you.
Excellent, thank you so much. Everyone say thank you, Nikki.
Thank you, Nikki.
Woo-hoo. Awesome. All right, what do we got?
First of all, child-proof packaging, which is really mostly adult-proof packaging. I got on the first try.
Nice.
We got the PAX device, so this is a battery. That's the other thing that's really confusing. There's like 6 different kinds of batteries. So a lot of people will just buy the pod and not the battery, but you need both for certain things. And then I got a pod for it. So this is Jetty. I think that's a Pride, no?
Thank you.
A Pride one. And then the the Kiva Tropical Punch Camino with the drag queen on it. and then the Dosist Relief Pen, which is great.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Awesome. Okay, I'll take all of that.
Perfect.
Thank you so much. we may or may not try something at some point in the next few minutes, but
imbibe.
I'm still figuring out whether that's a good idea or not. all right, let's get back to Q&A. So, yes.
Can you please tell us
who you are and who you're with?
Yeah, my name is Carlisle, and I'm here with Ancient Nutrition and Dr. Axe. We actually just released a line of CBD hemp products, and we're based in Nashville, and I'm the social media manager, so a big part of my job is education and answering questions on social about all kinds of things. And obviously, we can, state the facts, how much THC, how much CBD, what the terpene profile is, lot number, all that stuff. But when somebody's like, hey, what are the benefits? Since there's nothing federally we can talk about, we can't answer those questions.
Yep.
So from your experience, what's something compliantly that we can do to kind of navigate that system and to stay on top of it without losing basically all of the momentum we've built up on this CBD, THC, cannabis education?
That is a great question. The word reported is going to be your favorite word. That's actually why we started surveying, because you're not allowed to make any medical claims and there's no kind of legitimate research. But if you say out of a survey of 10,000 consumers, they reportedly feel these things after they consume CBD, there's a little bit more legitimacy there. Hemp-based CBD, we actually launched a platform 6 months ago, Ease Wellness, which is a hemp-based CBD marketplace that ships across the U.S. There's a lot more kind of leeway. We just launched a product with Paul Pierce, so there's a lot of athletes getting into the space, which is awesome. But education is huge. A lot of people are like, is it going to show up in my drug test? Will it get me high? What's hemp-based CBD? What's isolate? What's full spectrum? I mean, it is confusing. And there's a lot of snake oil out there. You know, there's a lot of products that have very low amounts of CBD, but charge, you know, so much more. And, you know, my personal, what I really don't like about it is I don't want it to seem like a fad, because I don't want a lot of these companies to be giving CBD a bad name, because it legitimately does help. And then there's tons of other cannabinoids that we haven't even kind of looked more into, but I'll save that for my future predictions. Yeah.
Wow, a lot of questions. All right, so we're going to go over, yep, just in the middle here. Hey, we're not quite a cartridge.
That wasn't me. My name is Mike. Thanks for the presentation. It was great. So a lot of people, there's a lot of healthy competition within agencies and things like that. But with Ease, the competition doesn't seem so healthy. Seems pretty adversary. So how do you compete in your space when people, your competitors, are actively competing against you versus competing for the business?
Yeah, great. That's also a great question. You know, we had first mover's advantage. We were first to market. And from the get-go, we knew eventually there'd be competitors. Our CEO actually, like 2 months ago at our all hands, was like, we're just going to ignore them. We're going to keep our heads down and keep doing what we're doing, focusing on access, focusing on, you know, being the best marketplace for consumers, and just keep doing what we're doing and building out. You know, we expanded into Portland. We're looking at other states. Our public affairs lobbying team are across the country working with states who are considering delivery and legalizing it. So we're just doing us and let the haters hate, I guess.
Can you open this for me?
You see? Thanks. It's hard.
Yeah. Yep, up the back there.
Hi, my name's Maria. I'm with Hope Lab, which is a tech company that builds health products for teens and young adults. Huge Eves fan. Love you guys.
Thank you.
My question lies with your social impact program, which is awesome. I didn't actually know that you guys had that. I was curious if you guys were doing anything in the space of working, you know, with incarcerated folks that have had, you know, have been in this business for a very long time, more on the illegal side. And if there is anything that you guys were doing there.
Yeah, lots. So that's the whole social justice aspect of it. Most recently, we partnered with Code for America, which has created an algorithm that automatically goes through records and expunges like low-level drug-related convictions. The process of getting your record expunged is really, it's costly, it's confusing, it's time-consuming. So we've sponsored a lot of expungement clinics where, you know, and a lot of our lawyers will also volunteer their time for it to really help communities come to us, help get their records expunged. The Code for America thing is amazing because it happens like that. So that was a really important partnership for us. We also work with different companies, different nonprofits. There's one in the Bay Area called Success Centers that has been working with marginalized communities for 30 years, just placing people in jobs. We work with them to again, be kind of the channel or access point to bring people back into the industry and hook them up with jobs. So it's, yeah, we'll be doing a lot more this year too.
Let's take one more question. Yep, up here.
Hello. Hi, I'm Tatiana. I'm with Social Tribe. We're a social media marketing agency, and we're primarily in B2B. We do content, social, and influencer marketing.
Sorry, was that weed to weed?
B2B.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry.
But weed to weed sounds fun, too. So our influencers are primarily, again, B2B. So I'm really fascinated by the process that you use to brief the influencers that you work with. You said that there's a lot of misinformation out there, all these little details. How do you brief them on how to post, what to post, so that they're not adding to the confusion?
Yeah, it's a really, it's like a big packet our legal team has put together, and it's like do's and don'ts and language that you use. You know, weed, pot, we don't really use that forward-facing. Marijuana also has a huge like racial stereotype to it, so we've moved away from that word. So it's like a combo of giving them just a guide, but also we don't want their accounts to get shut down because that's also, that could happen. So then it's working with them and approving every post and having our, literally our compliance specialist is CC'd on every social, like the social calendars, and make sure that we're not making any medical claims, or we'll help kind of make the words a little artsier so it's not a medical claim.
So we're going to have to wrap, but before we do, I want to tell you a quick story. So I was invited to speak at the Krispy Kreme Global Marketing Conference in Orlando about 3 years ago. And while I was on stage, I stopped my presentation and basically said, look, I've been here for a few hours and I still haven't eaten a donut yet. And the CMO came up on stage and gave me like a glazed donut, and I ate it while I was like giving my presentation. And then 2 weeks ago, I spoke at a Macallan conference in Edinburgh, and same thing happened, and they brought me a Macallan Scotch on stage while I was speaking. And so it just feels to me that it would be remiss if I didn't actually like try this product on stage. So cheers. Thank you so much, Gina.
Did it vibrate?
Yeah.
Yeah. See, it's easy.
Amazing. Thanks so much, everyone. Awesome to have you. Cheers. Thank you for listening to Leads to Scale, a podcast from Social Media Week. Leads to Scale is edited and produced by Al Manarino. For the latest news and insights, or to learn more information about how to get involved with future Social Media Week events, please visit socialmediaweek.org.